This is a real privilege for me. So Idina is one of my best friends, and she was my bridesmaid. And so I'm really, really happy to be to be here today, not just for that. But the first time I met Idina was when I arrived at Ealing Christian Fellowship, and I went along to a small group, and I went in and sat down next to Idina on the settee. And, oh no, you don't know what I'm going to say, do you?
Don't worry.
So Idina shared in that evening how she'd actually taken out a whole day to pray with God about things that she wanted to do in her life. And in that time, God had spoken to her, and she had made a plan to give up her job, go to India on a mission, or maybe it was just take time out and go on a mission. And all these things had fallen into place, but she'd taken the whole day out to pray. And that, for me, was a really good image of Idina, really, because actually that's how she is all the time. She's been somebody who throughout her life has gone on taking out retreats, just spending loads and loads of time with God. I don't know how many you've had, but it's definitely yearly, if not bi-yearly, isn't it, that you go away? And with that, also, that has led to lots and lots of mission, particularly in India, which is a place that she loves very much. So Idina, why don't you just tell us a bit about your other sort of church background things?
Okay, so as Karen said, I met her in Ealing. I was back there at Ealing Christian Fellowship Pioneer Church. Since then, I've moved into being in the Anglican Church in Southall. I was in Ealing for quite a number of years and then felt God's call to start a missional community in Southall. And it's a very different place. I'll be talking a bit more about it and showing some slides later on. But yeah, thank you. It's great, a privilege to be here, and wonderful. Thank you.
So how many times did you go to India?
I've probably been there about 10 times, but only very short times each time, maximum 4 months. I was there 4 years ago in Lucknow, in the north of India, helping at a Missionaries of Charity home for women and giving some encouragement to a team that was out there. So.
Brilliant, thank you. And Matt is from Tear Fund. So Matt, what is your role at Tear Fund?
I work in the advocacy and campaigning part of Tear Fund, so encouraging our supporters and the church to take action. We've been involved in a number of different things around climate change, but also trying to sort of encourage people to look at their faith in the context of politics and engaging in the political system and taking action, campaigning, but lifestyle being part of that as well. So as we come on today to talk about the connection between lifestyle and politics and the two together as an expression of our faith, that's the kind of stuff we do. So we run campaigns. Our current one we'll talk a little bit about today, Renew Our World, and just encouraging people to see that as part of their discipleship and part of their faith.
So how long have you been at Tear Fund, and what are the different projects that you've worked on?
I've been at Tear Fund a while. I did a voluntary trip about 15 years ago and kept my links up with Tear Fund after that, and then joined Tear Fund to then help other people to go and volunteer with projects overseas as part of their faith and their work. So I joined a volunteer team. I've been in this current role in the advocacy team for about 4 years.
Right, thank you. Well, you're both very welcome. Thank you for coming. I will now pass over to back to Matt.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Well, it's so, so good to be here. Thank you so much for your welcome. It's really nice to see this place and just kind of sense that sort of welcome and God's spirit being here with us. I love the building and the space you create and just a sense of welcome and atmosphere that we've had. So thank you very much for that. I'm going to hopefully show some slides. Is that possible? We've got some slides as part of our talk. So I'm going to sort of do the first part of the session, and then Idina's gonna carry on and do part two. So we live in Southall. Both Idina and I are part of a community called St. John's in Southall in West London. It's a very urban, very multicultural, multi-faith context. And the community we're part of earlier this year got our Bronze Eco Church Award as part of our acts of worship. So it's doable. You can do this. This is a picture of me and my son, George. We were celebrating on the day we got our award. So it was good that a number of people from the community were part of that journey, part of that experience. We joined in with the Arosha Green Communion, which was a sort of a year celebrating the anniversary of the first year of Eco Church. So we had a service kind of to celebrate the fact that we got to the Bronze Award and sort of joined in with other churches around the UK that were doing that day. So that was just a moment from Southall. And as I begin, I just wanted to read to you a couple of verses from the Message version of Romans 12. So I'm just going to read these now. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Those verses have meant a lot to me in my faith and in my journey, in recognizing that as we worship God, it is with the whole of our lives and the whole of our beings and the whole of ourselves. God is just as interested in our Monday morning as he is here today. And I loved what was said at the start about this whole idea of Eco Church not being a thing that takes over and becomes the whole focus, but actually is part of who we are in our fullness as Christians, as people, as part of a community, as part of a church. God is interested in everything, and God can see us in the context of everything. And so actually our ordinary everyday is just as important as what we do here on a Sunday morning, as important as that is as well. So change, we believe, starts with our lifestyles. And we can see here we have food and energy and travel and things that we just do in our everyday. And I believe, and Tearfund believes, and the work that Eco Church is doing believes, that actually our lifestyles are important ways in which we can serve God, which we can see God and experience God in the everyday. And so these kind of changes, starting with our lifestyles, kind of begin in some ways with our ordinary everyday, our food, our travel, our homes and our stuff. They're all part of God's creation. They're all part of who we are in our lives. And for me, I find that quite encouraging, but also quite challenging, because I know that when it comes to these things, I'm not living this perfect life. I'm not always living how perhaps God would want it to be. But also, I believe in the grace of God and the God that takes us on a journey and is walking with us as we think about how to engage in these areas. And so it could be with food that we start to think about our diets and the ways in which we can think about eating in a way that is more caring for God's planet and God's creation. With travel, can we car share? Can we cycle to work? Can we find ways to reduce our footprint there? With energy, the energy market I know very little about, but I know it's changing a lot. And there's an opportunity now to invest in a lot more renewable energy. And switching our supplier to a green and renewable supplier is something that can be done and can sometimes even save us money as well. And stuff is something that we all have in our lives. Recently, as a family, we took on a challenge. There's a thing called minimalism. It's run by this group called the Minimalists, and they do a little game, little challenge, where on the first day, you just have to give up one thing and let that go. And then day two, you do two and carry on. And I thought, you know, we would kind of get, you know, maybe 10 days in and struggle as a family to do much more than that. But we carried on going. But the thing that really amazed me was that even we managed to get to the end of the month. But actually, even though we'd cleared a lot of stuff from our lives, there were still huge amounts of stuff there. And sometimes we don't realize the journey that we're on with all that stuff that we are consuming. But I think as well as lifestyle actions, it's about a much bigger story of being generous, of having a spirit of generosity, of being open to the prophetic and God speaking into us and through us, of using our voice, using our money and our time and our investment as both citizens, but also as consumers, and speaking to the companies and the organizations that we consume with, but also speaking to our elected leaders and being able to raise our voice there. And really valuing relationships and really valuing the importance of building relationships. Tearfund is a relational organization at heart, and our theory of tackling poverty is all around the fact that we have broken relationships and how can we go on a journey to restore relationships with others, with God, with God's creation, and even the brokenness of ourselves, and how those four dimensions of relationships are really important for how we relate in the world. Just one of the things that we're focusing on at the moment in terms of our lifestyles is the issue of food. There's a story in John's Gospel, chapter 6, which we may know, some of us, around the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus crosses the lake and a great crowd of people are gathering. The Jewish Passover festival is near and he sees a great crowd coming towards him. And he knows that these people are here to listen to him, but also are hungry. And so he asks, who can feed these people? And they gather together these 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will that go amongst this group of at least 5,000 men, possibly more in terms of women and children? And amazingly, the story carries on that the food is distributed. Miraculously, it does feed all of those people. And that's a great thing to celebrate. And God works miraculously in the midst of our lives. But interestingly, at the end of this story, there's a verse that sometimes gets missed. And it's this one here in verse 12, at the end of the story. It says, Jesus says, gather up the pieces that are left over and let nothing be wasted. And that's an encouraging thing, I think, to sort of say that even in the midst of this miracle, even in the midst of this amazing provision, God doesn't do waste. God wants to make sure that all these pieces are gathered up and used. Incredibly, in our world today, around a third of the food that's produced is never eaten. So partly in terms of our fields and our land, we have a situation where around a third of the products that are grown don't meet the strict cosmetic standards set upon them and so go to waste. But also more often than we realise, in our homes, in our everyday lives, in our supermarkets, in the catering industry, a lot of food that is produced is going to waste. And that's an issue because it kind of means that as well as it doing damage to God's creation, it's actually hurting us. We're wasting money. Money can be saved. So it's an interesting dilemma because we have a very understandable situation in our nation where we have a need for food and many people going to food banks and needing food in terms of food poverty. But actually a huge amount is also going to waste. And as well as that impacting upon us, the impact of that is actually bigger than we might sometimes realize. This is Sylvia. She is from Malawi. And here she is foraging for food for her family's dinner. It's a daily reality. She does have land to work, but the rains have become so unreliable in recent years that her crops have often failed. And the changing climate means she can't harvest enough food to regularly feed her family. Now, she's seen this change for herself just in her lifetime. When she was a girl, the rains came consistently and there was always enough. But now what she grows is only about a fifth of what she and her family need to survive. And so during lean months, she has to gather leaves and boil them to feed her children. And we might be asking, well, how does our food waste and Sylvia's hunger connect? And it's a really good question to ask. Food production as a whole generates around a fifth of the world's greenhouse gases. And we obviously do need food. And so we need a system that allows us to continue to produce food. But when that system is generating that much impact and a third of that production is going to waste, you've got to start asking questions. What's really going on? Why are we using these precious resources of land and water and time, skills, producing emissions and then throwing that away? So families like Sylvia's begin to really feel the pain and that they're at the forefront of the impact of this. Now, food is a great thing. I'm sure the thing you're going to do on Friday night to celebrate and have cheese and wine, I'm sure the food we get here is something we're not saying food is a bad thing. We want to celebrate good food and give thanks to God for food. But actually, how can we live in a way that enables us to really appreciate that more and think about it? Here are just some 3 sort of top little tips. It can be that we refuse to buy more than we need. We can reduce the amount of waste that way. We can also be creative with our fridges and freezers. And if things are coming to the end, we can always cook up bigger portions and freeze them, put things into our freezers. and also share and have times together where we can share food. So as part of this kind of campaign, Renew Our World, Renew Our Food, we're encouraging people to think about how they can reduce their own food waste. So there were some cards on the chairs. And today, during some of the reflection time a bit later, there might be space for you, if you want to think about, is this an area that I could do to reduce my food waste? And we're also calling upon supermarkets to reduce their waste as well. There's a new goal set by the United Nations around sustainable development to reduce food waste by half by the year 2030. And so our campaign, as well as encouraging people to bring change through their lifestyles and reduce their own waste, is to encourage supermarkets to reduce their waste, right from farm to fork, the whole journey, and encourage them to actually go as far as committing to reducing their waste by half and publishing that and being committed to that campaign. So that's a thing you can do today as part of a lifestyle action to think about food. But we want to celebrate food. We want to give thanks to God for food, but recognise that the food we're living is, we're connected more than we realise to the situations around the world. So in the spirit of that, it's being holding on to the fact that we want to be generous and open and really value relationships and see those connections. And as we move on now, I'm going to hand on to Idina, who's going to lead us into this next area around simplicity and what's happening in Southall.
Thanks, Matt. That's really great. I think Matt's given a wonderful overview about some of the things that Tearfund are talking about, some of the things that he's been living out. And I just want to carry on really just with some practical and, just some ordinary things that we've been doing in our everyday lives, as that passage from Romans said, over the last few years in Southall. Karen asked me to speak a little bit about simplicity, and so I will be doing that over the next few minutes. At the moment, I'm living in Southall, as we said, but I'm also studying theology in Oxford at Church Mission Society, CMS. And I recently had to write an essay. I'm not that great at essays, but I recently had to write an essay called, and it was titled, "Consumerism is the Default Spirituality of Our Age. Discuss." It's like, oh. Wow, what am I going to say? So anyway, I started reading a little bit, and I was hearing last week many people have been on a journey around looking at the environment and God's world and thinking, what can we do about all of our lifestyles and how we're affecting God's world? And so really, I hadn't considered directly before what a challenge consumerism is to both our world but also to our faith. So the consumerist lifestyle is constantly reinforced to us through advertising, through education and the media, and it easily becomes pervasive and addictive, and it insidiously affects every aspect of our choices, our relationships and our lives. So as we've been hearing last week and also the video and just now through Matt, there are many symptoms of consumerism that are making our world unsustainable. So there are huge environmental issues and an environmental breakdown. We've heard about climate change, which is worsening and predominantly affecting the poor. We've heard about the consumption of Western nations that's contributing excessive carbon emissions that are affecting our environment. And that our overconsumption leads to pollution and poisoning of our planet, especially maybe waste production, leaching chemicals into the world, the earth, and needless destruction of our natural environment. There are inequalities in wealth. So I found this interesting fact that Oxfam have calculated that the world's 8 richest billionaires control the same wealth between them as the poorest 50% of the world's population. It's incredible. While 10% of people in our world don't have enough to eat. So I think while we're thinking of lifestyles in our groups a little bit later on, it's worth thinking that this is something that's really something that we need to think is impacting our world severely. also kind of think, maybe have a think back about what you've eaten today, the clothes that you're wearing. Do you know who grew the food or who made them, the clothes that you're wearing? We're so distant from those who produce the cheap items that we buy or that we eat. Our production is outsourced to cheap labour markets, the conditions might shock us if we only knew about them. Karen mentioned that I've been to India a few times, and when I went to stay in a slum in Delhi a few years ago, I was appalled to see there were teenagers that were hammering rivets into jeans by hand just beside the street, just outside their homes, and getting an extremely low wage for that. I'd assumed, like naively, that this task would be done in a factory, maybe by a robot, but it was my geographical separation from that reality that created my ignorance. And then thirdly, we see a breakdown of community, and that leads to loneliness. Many are trapped in a treadmill of earning a salary that will provide enough for their ever-increasing needs, working long hours, maybe commuting long distances, and time with families, friends and neighbours suffer, which can lead to community breakdown and also loneliness for many people. So what is the alternative? If we have all these things that are happening that are affecting ourselves and our world, what is the alternative? Actually, God presents us with an alternative. So throughout the Old Testament, he presents this alternative from the consumerist society. So there's a law of Jubilee and there's debt cancellation. He presents active concern for the poor. So Psalm 140 verse 12 says, I know that the Lord secures justice for the poor and upholds the cause of the needy. And the prophets rebuke those involved in exploitation, excessive wealth and consumption. For example, Micah 6:8, Micah says, He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And then at the incarnation, our God became poor. Jesus was born into a poor family. He was a refugee himself and homeless. He preached good news to the poor and most often associated with poor people. He spoke plainly in parables about the danger of wealth and acted on financial justice issues. For example, he asked Zacchaeus to repay from those he had stolen and overturn the money changers in the temple. And lastly, I've put on the bottom servants. Now, as we've said, servants is not about having servants in our homes, but it's about an organisation that I've been working with over the last, I've been involved with them for the last 15 years. It's an organisation that works amongst the poor and marginalised in the slums of Asia and also in the West. And the spirituality is based around five foundational values, and simplicity is one of them. So we describe it as setting aside affluence and comfort, we commit ourselves to lifestyles of inner and outward simplicity in order to be free to love God and serve the poor. Setting aside our right to affluence while there are still those who live in abject poverty, we desire to be a relevant yet prophetic voice in a world preoccupied with self. So I'll just unpack that a little bit and speak about what we have been doing in Southall over the last 8 years. I moved to Southall in 2008 with four others, and we wanted to create an intentional missional community. So I'll tell you a bit about our story and weave in some of the ways we've tried to live out simplicity and its effects. I won't be covering every area, but I think you'll be discussing later on perhaps things like technology and other factors that you may think about that I won't be touching on. So Southall's a place of very high ethnic diversity. You may have visited, you may have come for a curry. I do recommend it, please come. And parts of Southall, though, are within the 5% most deprived in the UK. We wanted to move there to learn from our neighbours and be a loving presence in our neighbourhood. We love Southall. We love the people of Southall, and especially we love the food. I think I had a picture there. We love the jalebis, so we love the curries. But we also found that as we lived there, we started to see that deprivation had effects. Many of our neighbours and friends are unable to enter the competitive consumer society. They may be unemployed, they have mental health and physical health problems. They may have immigration barring them from working. And this leads to lowered self-esteem and often depression as well. So we tried there to live a simple lifestyle in order to relate well to our neighbours. We lived in community and we reduced our outgoings. This meant we could work part-time and have more time to spend in our neighbourhood. This is some of the houses we moved into on our council estate. Sorry. So in community, we didn't have a common purse or give up personal ownership of items, but we did agree to have a level of accountability to each other in our spending. So the benefit of living in community was we all shared the same values. We all had simplicity as a foundation, which enabled us to have awareness and discuss with each other about this culture of consumerism. For example, we realised that others stay poor worldwide if we have excessive consumption, so we chose just solutions like fair trade. As Mother Teresa states, we must live simply in order for others to simply live. I have to admit, when I joined the community, I wasn't really used to this. I enjoyed spending and shopping. I hadn't really thought or considered all of these factors. But 8 years on, after some struggles, I think we can't change our lives without struggling with these issues. My values have greatly changed. Some of the things that may have changed, most of my clothes I purchased from charity shops or given secondhand from my neighbours. We prayerfully consider together, and I might consult others before making purchases of expensive items or holidays. And I'm aware that my neighbours are unable to afford food at restaurants, so I limit how often I eat out. I have to say I'm certainly not there. I haven't reached really peace and to do this without struggle. But I feel that I've, through engaging with the community, through their support, I have changed some of my choices. And I think that's really great to have accountability in that way. A servant's leader once said, "By living simple and environmentally sustainable lifestyles, we can show love for God's creation and fulfill his mandate to be caretakers of it." So we recognise that the earth's resources are finite and not to be exploited. Before we rented a house in Southall, we rented an allotment. So that was our first piece of land that we had in Southall. And instead of just deciding to garden it ourselves, we wanted to create it into a community garden and share our passion for God's earth. So we partnered with Arosha and we drew in some people, maybe some from a mental health service, some just by word of mouth came along and grew these vegetables. And it's still going 8 years on. I was there last week. I was telling Karen we made chapatis over an open fire, which was fun. I hadn't done that before. I wasn't very good and they laughed at me. We picked raspberries and they planted a hazelnut seed that they'd picked off one of the trees locally, and they wanted us to pray for it and pray for what all the planting that they'd done. So we did that, which was great. We also shame and show value to those around us by doing things that don't involve status or money. We created opportunities for community and hosted events where we all shared food but didn't involve any other spending. Also in our community, we try to be generous, build community by having an open door for people to come in, drink tea, eat meals, and share their joys and sorrows. This is our Thursday night gathering social time where we started to invite our neighbours in and have a shared meal together. And we prayed at the beginning of the each evening. We found that people wanted to loved coming in and praying together. And so we've now transitioned into a new congregation in our church, gathering some of those neighbours together and some others from our locality to worship and pray together, which is wonderful. So just to finish off, outward simplicity is all very well. We need to change our lifestyles, but this must also mirror our inward simplicity. As Karen said, I've been involved in quite a few retreats, but I have to say that I've always been a bit wary of the contemplatives who seem to retreat from life and be so heavenly minded that they're no earthly good, perhaps. However, I think voluntary poverty has been characterised by saints and communities, perhaps the Desert Fathers, St. Francis. But actually their poverty wasn't a retreat from the world, but an identification with the poor. If you read of St. Francis's journey, he really wants to identify with the poor through all he does. It's characterised by lack of possessions and inward simplicity, and it became a blessing not just for the poor, but also for the one living simply. And I think that's the key. Jesus' teaching on wealth, giving and simplicity aren't given just to limit us, but to lead us from freedom, from bondage to freedom, so we each can find abundant life. So Jesus demonstrates this and speaks about it to the rich man when he asks him to sell his possessions and give to the poor. The man went away sad because he had great wealth. A poem I once wrote included the lines, "I'm falling in love with a God who has loved me with an irrational love. He knows our weaknesses, yet sees our potential. He's shown me his character in Jesus, who loved the rich man enough to ask him to give up all he had. And he has loved me and the people I love enough to give his life so we can live life in all its fullness." So God calls us to live simply because he knows the effect the consumer economy has on us, that fullness of life is not found in wealth creation but increasing possessions. It's not found there. Ruth Valerio, who we've heard about today, says, "Simplicity helps us discover the happiness that comes not from having the abundance of money and things, but having the space for intimacy in our friendships, the space for ourselves, and primarily the space for God." So by living simply, I feel freed to spend more time in my neighbourhood, to find space for God. I can find abundance of fullness of life through receiving and giving generously, through caring and supporting my neighbours through interdependence, and finding pleasure in people rather than things, in the local, the slow and the small. So just to summarise, there's a reading that St. Paul writes from 1 Timothy, and it says, "Command those who are rich in this present world," and on a global scale, that's all of us in this room, "not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so they may take hold of the life that is truly life." So I pray that as we go into groups, as we consider our practical response to this, that we may take hold of that life that is truly life. Just as I finish, I have left some books over there. Please take one. We are decluttering. Our house has too many possessions, as Matt said, and we're getting rid of these books. So please do take them. They're stories from servants of people around the world who've been living in some really quite radical ways. If you'd like to take one, please do. And I'll hand back to Chloe.
Thank you very much, Adina. I think there's really loads of really challenging, interesting ideas in there, hopefully. I think there's quite a lot to chew on. So what I wanted to suggest in the following the theme of simplicity is just to have a few minutes of silence, just a little bit of space for you to just process what you've heard, maybe make a note of things that you might want to, maybe ideas that you thought, actually, I want to do that differently. I'm just going to write down that so that I think about it when I get home. Or maybe I'm going to pull on a couple of things that I've learned from doing my St. Ignatius course, is that one is to recognise inside you, little movements, maybe that you've been really drawn to something that she said, or that Matt said, or maybe you felt a little bit of resistance and a struggle towards anything she said, something that maybe feels a bit, you just don't get it, or something you don't like about it. Maybe you just go to one of those places that you were drawn to or resistant towards and just start to process that with God and just ask him, what's going on and what do you want to say about it? And the other thing that I've been learning in St. Ignatius is about being indifferent. So I don't think this is about saying it's better for everyone to be poor. It's just about saying let's declutter so that the thing that we most care about is knowing God and following his call and having the space to be able to know what he's calling us to do in our lives. So just a couple of suggestions there. There's also the little card. So take a few minutes, just be quiet, reflect, and then drift off and grab a cup of coffee and we'll move into the next section of the meeting.